Oh, yeah, then she said report.
All right. So. There are certain beautiful blessings that from all people Bilam gave to the Jewish people in the portion of the week, and from the earlier blessings that he articulated, it's amazing how someone so unpure gave pure, beautiful brachot. And he said these words, Lo hibit aven b'yakov. Lo hibit aven b'yakov. Which means that Hashem does not observe. Aven with an aleph, is one of the expressions of failing, of sin. That God does not observe the sin of Jacob. V'lo ra'a amal b'Yisrael. And God does not see struggle in Israel. It doesn't say that God does not see struggle in Yaakov. So this is a mimer of the Alter Rebbe in which he explains Yaakov Yisrael. He speaks about struggle. And he points out the awesomeness of being obedient, which would be, I think, a more accurate translation of the word Eved, of being an Eved to God. I know the word Eved in the Western culture is a trigger word, because the way some people here became Avadim was in violation of the Ten Commandments, in which God says, don't steal people. We're not talking about that type of Eved. We're speaking about someone choosing to be obedient, and I just want to define what that means. Choosing to listen doesn't have to mean obedient. There are many things that we don't even initiate, but my involvement is not an avdut involvement. But then there are other places in life where we will dafka use the word evet. And let me begin with a beautiful story. We are coming into the birthday and the day of the celebration of the previous Rebbe, who was himself a writer. He recorded, and we have a lot of his diary. When he was young, his father was very ill. It was for sure also an inner illness. It wasn't just a physical illness, even if it was a physical illness, because we know from, for example, there were years that he did not see his father. And by doctor's orders then, his father was not allowed to get emotionally excited. And it wasn't that he was a bad child, the opposite. There was a tremendous, you read the way there was a love between his father and he was the only son, the only child, the only son, that his father would get very emotional when he would see him. And his father's emotional imbalance, tzaddik, was physically something that he could not bear. He was raised by his grandmother. And during one of these periods of deep illness, in which they were in the same roof, but he was not allowed, no one was allowed to interact with the Rebbe Rashab. He was a Rebbe then, other than his wife. And you read these stories, you wonder, what about she did not, I don't know how to explain that. Maybe someone needed to be in service of him. Yeah. So the choice was the wife, probably. And there was a time that he describes, this is in between 9 and 11. He was a child. He says he hasn't seen his father for a very long amount of time. And his father was going from bad to worse, and the energy in the home was very sad. And he felt that his father's life is coming to an end, and he wanted to do something. At that time, he was still in school. The previous Rebbe, like many extraordinary children, at some point, they were homeschooled. The Rebbe was homeschooled from very young because the teachers did not know how to teach him. He was also homeschooled later. This age 9-11, he had 4 teachers in Cheder, and he writes about each one. This teacher, the one the story happened was with Rab Nissan, I wish I would remember his last name, he writes his name, and he writes that Rab Nissan had an extraordinary refined character. And the way the teacher, that's just on the side, the way Rav Nissen influenced him as a child, he says that my teacher loved me so much, and it was through the love from the teacher to the student that he was able to elevate me, to appreciate the refined character and the beauty of having a refined character. That's a good sign in life. We all know that, that the teacher will influence the student. Yeah, give them the right attention and again, speak clearly. Don't punish them. Be just with them properly. But there has to be a keshet of love between a teacher and a student. Okay, anyway, this Rav Nissen, he loved him. He says, he went over to his teacher and he says, teacher, Rav Nissen, I want to do something for my father. I want to do something. Rav Nissen, amongst many character traits, was very modest. So he told me that there's nothing greater than a prayer. And there's nothing greater than a prayer from you as someone who loves your father, as a son of your father. You're still innocent. You're a child. There's nothing greater than a prayer at the burial place of tzaddikim. And there's nothing greater than fasting. And he gave him a whole list of, and put them all together. So he tells, and you have to be modest. So he tells him that you pick a date, and he says you'll need someone, you're young, you'll need a helper, only pick one. And make sure that no one other than the helper knows what you're doing. Wake up early. And he told him how to prepare himself before he goes to the mikvah. This is a 9-year-old, a 10-year-old. So he woke up 3 a.m. and he prepared himself. And he went to the mikveh, someone helped him, took him to the mikveh, to be safe. And then they took him on a trip to go to the Lubavitch, to where his grandfather and great-grandfather were buried. The Rebbe, the Tzemach Tzedek. And he told him how to daven by the burial site while fasting. And he should come back early enough that no one should realize that he was gone. Don't tell a word that you're fasting. He says, finish the day fasting. And he says that Rav Nissen told the Reis of Yitzchak, your prayer will have an effect. So no one knew, not his mother, not garnished. He gets up early, he makes his achanas, a little tzaddikal, and he begins a fast, and he goes to the mikveh, and he goes on the trip, a secret trip, and he davens mishtateach on the kever of the tzaddikim, and he comes back, and he says, when I entered the home, I felt joy. What happened during that time is that his father had a tremendous upturn to the better. He was about to die and knew. Now, he doesn't even write in his diary. He wrote this when he was older. He wrote this later. He doesn't even write my davening. He doesn't make a mention, but yeah, it was his tefillah. What he writes is that there was joy in the house. There was light in the house. And not only that, his father was awake. His father called for him. And he hasn't seen his father for a long time. And he says, with tremendous joy, he entered his father's room. And no one else was there. And his father called him by both of his names. Yosef Yitzchak. He says, what are you learning? And he describes, that's another side note, that it's common in the religious world when you see a student, whether they're 3, whether they're 15, you quiz them. And it could be a bit intimidating. What are you learning? What are you not learning? But he describes how the love that was coming from his father was so overwhelming that he didn't feel the gevura of what are you learning? And he began to share what he's learning. And he saw the nachas his father had. And then his father asked him, Yosef Yitzchak, are you eating? And he says, I was trapped. Trapped. Look at the boy. The whole idea was no one should know that he's fasting. No one should know that he went to daven. No one should know that. On the other hand, Emes. And to his father? So he says, and you see the hand of God. The hand of God was, he writes, that his mother walked into the room. She came to bring him a tea. And when she walked in and she saw he was there, she got angry at him. So he was saved by his mother, who said, Yosef Yitzchak, why are you here? And his father, intervening, tells his mother, she tells him, let him be here. Actually, he says, let him serve me the tea. Turned out that his father forgot that he even asked him about the food, and he was saved by the anger of his mother. It's a very beautiful description of that moment. But then he goes on to speak about why did his father want for him to serve him the tea? So you should know like this, that there is a concept that maybe is underappreciated. It's called Shimush Talmidei Chachamim. Yehoshua, who became the successor of Moshe, might not have been the smartest student. Could be he was. Could be he was. But that's not the way we describe him. Why did he succeed Moshe? Lo yamish mitoch ha'oel. That means that he was always at the service of his teacher. That means that even when the studies were over, Yeshua felt that his teacher might need him. Moshe Rabbeinu might need him to help him walk, might need him to carry a bag. I want to be available for him to do menial tasks. Things that are, it's called a shamash, I'm a shamash. You have in the Jewish culture, I don't know what the word is by the Sephardim, by the Ashkenazim, there is a shamash of a shul. The shamash means the guy that has no position of honor. He's not the gabbai, he's not deciding who's getting an aliyah. Shamash means the guy that would push it, he would sweep the floor, he would clean the tables, he would put the books back on the shelves. He would do something that could be viewed as insignificant work, work that even a goy can do. I don't mean this in a derogatory way. Even someone who doesn't know about anything can do. Anyone can sweep the floor. Dafka to do it.
But as a choice.
As a choice, exactly. That's what I'm, in other words, there's something about me doing something of wow. And then there is the humility, the beauty of a choice that we make to be obedient. That's the word evid, to be an evid. Mm-hmm. To be an evid, just to share one more story, that by Hasidim, by Rebbes, in the Hasidic world, there's a lot of value, I still think not enough, placed on this concept of being in service of another person. Mm-hmm. It goes to any other person. Dafke, things that are not important, not something that you get excited about. Simply, someone doesn't want to do something, I'll do it for him. Mm-hmm. The Maggid of Mezrich had many Talmidim, and they had a system. Everyone so much wanted to be the Mishamish of the Rebbe that they made a lotteries. And the lucky winner was the Mishamish for one day. And they were Mishamish again. I don't know exactly their marriage status. Like, you read these stories, it doesn't sound like they were married men, the tzaddik. Maybe during the week he stayed in the shul. I don't know how it worked. But the Mishamish, what did he do? It was that he stayed 24 hours with them. So in case, in the middle of the night, when they were older, they woke up, they needed to get a cup of water, they brought him a cup of water. It wasn't a specific thing. It was to be available to do menial tasks for them. And the Alter Rebbe wrote about the importance of being a Mishamish to a tzaddik.
And these tzaddikim, it sounds weird. Would they ask these people to do that for them? So they would wake up instead of actually getting up and going to
They would do it to give them that merit. And the imamish. Now, I know when people like us hear it, it won't be uncommon for people to smile. Like, yeah, sure. Yeah.
No, like I'm thinking both ways. Shalom. Many times even a tzaddik doesn't want to ask because he knows he can do it by himself.
A tzaddik wants to give merit to others. Now, I can say like this, that by the Rebbe had a team of people that were helpers to him, and they were great people. Maybe they were not. It's not the point. They were great people. They were Mishamish the Rebbe. There were certain things that the Rebbe did not allow for them to do. But that was not because the Rebbe didn't want to share the merit. I know that whenever people wrote letters to him, the Rebbe would be the one to open up the letters himself because he felt that it's confidential. And not only that, someone at some point bought the Rebbe a letter opener, an electronic letter opener. And the Rebbe didn't want to accept it. He told him that it's noisy. So the guy went ahead, this is in the 70s or in the 80s, and they found a patent, a silent electronic, just to make it easier. And the Rebbe then had no excuse. He sent it. So the Rebbe says that many people, they seal the envelope with their tears. And a machine won't pick that up. In other words, the Rebbe felt that if he's going to handle the letter, there was something that he would get that he would lose if a machine would do it. Uh-huh. And so there were certain things that Rebbe did. Remember, big bags of letters. And every time the Rebbe picked it up, Rabbi Groner would offer to help and the Rebbe would insist. But on the other hand, the Rebbe shared the merit of serving him. It's a big schos.
So he brought him lunch and water and tea. And
whatever coffee. It is, whoever had that opportunity, to be obedient to a tzaddik. That's where we use the word eved. We're speaking about obedience in this context. The Alter Rebbe won the lottery of being the Meshamash of the Maggid. And he made a point to write it. And he says it was dafka during the night when I was in service of the Meshadis. The Maggid woke me up. The Maggid told me beautiful Hasidic words of be calm, don't freak out in a much more refined way. Whatever happens, take in and don't react. The Rebbe is coming. The Rebbe's coming was the Baal Shem Tov, who passed away many years before. And he says, and he got up, and he put on his gartel, and he merited for the first time while awake to see the entrance of the Baal Shem Tov and to interact with him. Why did he merit that? He was implying because he was being then the Meshores to the Maggid. Okay.
Saying Eved with an Aleph?
With an Ayin. With an Ayin. Yeah.
You said another.
We're talking about obedience. We'll define it better. How obedience could be viewed as something very uninvolved, very plain, very not sophisticated. And there is a certain power in obedience that will transcend the contrast to it that we didn't explain it. When a king has a palace, what does the Eved do? Not the minister, not the chacham, not the advisor, something that no one else wants to do. They'll clean out the garbage, just as an example. They'll do something that's, you can say a necessity, or even if it's not a necessity, it would be nice, but it's not chashuv to do that which is unimportant. Some people get insulted when they are asked to do that type of service. For that, you need me. And we connect to God. Let's speak about God in a unique way when we become a Meshores to God. And what does that mean? What does that mean, Meshores to God? The Alter Rebbe in Tanya, the ABCs of Hasidus, establishes something. And then he goes against that. He first establishes something that we all know, but these are our words, that a human being, unless you were given a gift from above, which is very rare and not important if you did not get it, actually detrimental to you. Without the gift is the tzaddik, we are not meant to be able to fully refine our character traits. We are unable to do that. Our power, the only power that we have, is the capacity to be in control of our thoughts, words, and actions. Not that it's easy, very difficult. That is the area in which I have power. I can do it, I cannot do it, I can be strong, I can be weak, I can fail, I can get up. But my koyach is that if there is an expectation of me to do something, it's a right expectation. I'm not going into the detail because I have the capacity to do. Or if something is expected for me not to do, it's not a wrong expectations because it's within my koyach not to do anything. It can be harder, it can be easier. Feeling, it's not within our capacity. Like you tell a person, you're not allowed to be angry. That's a horrible way of framing something because we don't have the ability to be in control of our emotions. We do not. Actually, most religious people, since there's a lot of misunderstandings amongst the people, not when you read what it says, but the way it was wrongly presented to many of us. So when you tell a kid, you know, that anger is a bad midah, not allowed to be angry. What will that child do when they experience anger? When they're young, they're pure, and we keep on doing that mistake, is that we deny that we have anger. We won't even know that we're angry. Because me? You're not allowed to be angry. I'm not talking about expressing anger. I'm talking about feeling the anger. Or any other midara. Arrogant. Not allowed to be arrogant. Okay? So I'm not arrogant. Simple solution. Saying those words, it's a comedy. When you look back, you watch the comedy of it. Now, is there a way for a person to elevate themselves, to refine themselves? Yes, that's the second part of the Tanya. But first he makes the premise that to be a master over your emotions, it's not within the human realm. Know that. We have the responsibility to know what we're feeling. And then,
to choose how to act.
And then, firstly, to make sure that certain feelings don't find expression in deeds if they are inappropriate. That's the beginning. That's the Aleph Beis. But then the Alter Rebbe says there are ways, there are techniques. We call that avoida, work, inner work, in which a person will get some mastery over their emotions. We at times are able, at times, even a not tzaddik, to transform certain things. It's not black and white. I can't, and therefore I'm not going there. But a big beginning of Tanya is that we use the word average versus tzaddik in this mystical concept that tzaddik is the person who actually is in control of the feelings, to the, and they are exceptional people. In every generation, there are few. When we say 36, that's it. From 8 billion people, you got 36 of them. And they're angels. The rest of us, our inner struggle is because what we feel is not aligned with what is expected of us to do. So there's a conflict. And we have to deal with that conflict. I'm hungry, Yom Kippur, a conflict. I have the ability not to eat. Some years easy, some years hard, but God can give me the commandments, almost, not all of them, almost all of them is in the realm of doing. Do this, don't do that.
It's not think this or feel this.
No. Okay. Now, okay, after that's established, right? Like, don't be angry. No,
but ve'ahavta and fear, they're both emotions.
So we have an exception of ve'ahavta. And because of that, the Alter Rebbe concludes that even, exactly, there are few mitzvahs that are emotion. We're supposed to love God. We're supposed to be in awe of God. We're supposed to love our fellows. So there are mitzvahs of emotions. They are, from the 613, a very small percent. But what does that mean? It means that I need to know that I cannot fully master, but I have some power. There is that area in life. So I have my part. When I do my part, I'll succeed nothing. I'll succeed for a moment, 1,000,000%. I'll succeed in part. So let's go v'ahavta. So there's a mitzvah to love God. Some moments, I think people like us, especially if we make an effort to look at things differently, we feel love to God. We feel grateful to God. At some moments, we can feel awe of God. And it's a mitzvah to do our part. But can I expect of myself to be in a perpetual state of love to God? No. So therefore, don't be disappointed. Even if a person who got a big zetz on their head, at that moment they feel disappointed with God, don't tell a person you can't do that. The opposite. If that is what you're feeling, better for you to own what you're feeling. That's the beginning of your avoid instead of denying what you're feeling. We just spoke about this 2 weeks ago. You cannot let go of something if you don't know you're holding on to it. And many of us have that issue.
And what about telling Hashem, like, if you're feeling that, telling Hashem, I want to love you, but as for Shalom, I don't feel like I love
Mamash,
you right now.
That's the best, 100%. And that's the prayers that you read from great people. Or sometimes in reverse, whether what I'm saying now is true or not, I don't know. But I read this online, and these are good Chabad House speeches that I forgot his name now. But when they made the Warsaw Uprising, there is such a letter. Now, whether it's authentic or not, that's the question. Someone told me it's not authentic, and they take all the wind out of you. The letter is, I forgot his name, that at the end, when they were losing at the end, after they stood up like lions against the Nazis, and then what happened was is that they were being burnt. So there was gas. They were choked. They needed to, either they got burnt alive or they needed to come out of from the underground. He saw the woman who he wanted to marry. She was killed. His other guy, everyone was dead. Yaakov someone. So he wrote a letter. Adiyah Adinish. And then he wrote over there, he wrote a letter to God. And he wrote the letter to God that he was born. It's a beautiful letter. He was born loving God. He saw it by his parents. He had a love to God. And he says, God, you are almighty, but you failed. Such a powerful letter, if he wrote it. He says, you did this, to see if I will stop loving you. I did not. Still loved you. And then this happened. And he begins to write the major disasters. Then he writes that now she's dead and he's dead. You are trying to push me away from you. He writes, God, you failed. He wrote that in Bigot. You have that letter. And he writes, Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. What a beautiful statement. So, like, emotions are crazy. You can have all the reasons not to love God. You love God. Some people have all the reasons to love God. And you tell them, why are you complaining about? What? I don't know. You're right. In here, you're right. I feel right now abandoned by God. Like, feelings are, it's like a whole world that the Alter Rebbe writes a lot about. We have to understand that they are big, powerful things. We cannot master them. They master us. But it doesn't mean that we should wash our hands from it. We should see what it is, and then we have to learn how to navigate through it, and we have some contribution. Oh. But being that it's only some contribution, sometimes we can be vis-a-vis God without emotions. We can be without emotions or with negative emotions. Very good. So let me say these words now. The way the Alter Rebbe introduces the concept of a eved to God, what does it mean? What does it mean to be obedient to God? If there is an emotional connection, during the time that we have an emotional connection, positive emotional connection, whatever we do cannot be called obedience. I know it's semantic, but it's a good way to understand the word. Obedience, dafka, is used when I'm doing something without positive feelings. If I love God and I'm doing a mitzvah, I'm doing an act of love. If I'm respecting God, I'm doing an act of respect. If at least I want to be connected, everyone has words, and words are very important. If it's about expressing a feeling, whatever the feeling is, we won't frame that deed, that action, as an act of service or of servitude or of obedience. This is the way the Alter Rebbe defines the word eved. Eved is a term that's exclusively used when we have these periods, long, little, doesn't matter, in which we don't have positive feelings and many times negative feelings. Not the point. So, and if I will choose to do what God wants of me, nevertheless, which is a big part of our lives, in religion, in family, in work, part of life for a mature adult will be in the mood or not in the mood. You have a job, you go to work. Sometimes it's called an act of servitude. I feel like a slave. Many people say, I feel like I'm enslaved. The emphasis is that means the person is crying for more emotional feeling. Because when there is the emotional feeling, you won't feel like you're a slave. A person can say, wow, this is a lot. Okay, this fits, but this is an important just definition. Whenever we find eved, ki ata malkeinu, anu avadecha va'ata malkeinu. Whenever we refer to God as a king, and sometimes we refer to God as a father. That's what it means. It means that there are times that we feel an emotional connection. Nothing that we do then could be called an act of service. It's not an act of service. It's an act of feeling. You're expressing your feeling. Not the way you want, the way God wants, but you're expressing a feeling. You're expressing a feeling. Even if I don't get the tefillin, but God likes the tefillin. If I like God, I want to do the tefillin. So far, so good. Why would I be obedient to God if I don't have a feeling? How does that work? Because I believe. So there's belief. In other words, I believe in the truth. I'm not talking about, I don't feel it. I don't understand it. I believe in God. I believe that this is what God wants from me. So I'm going to do it.
It's like an autopilot.
Huh?
It's like an autopilot. Like just, yeah. Not thinking.
The ideal, well, I take back the word ideal. What we would prefer is that everything begins with faith. Mamish. But it should not stay just faith. The faith should lead me to enlightenment. Like really, really understand. Like, wow. And that should lead into a lot of emotional excitement, all different emotions, and that should then express itself in deed. That's the orderly chain of how things are meant to work. So the foundation is belief. From that, I become enlightened. From that, I become emotionally engaged. And then I express it through my deed.
What word are you using for enlightenment in Hebrew?
Chabad.
Okay.
Understanding things deeply. And there's a deep pleasure with that. Like the same boring whatever, all of a sudden, especially with older people, they look at something and you can see wise eyes. You see, wow, they get it. And when they explain, it's very uplifting. It's very elevating. It's elevating. It's enlightening. It's light. The greater people, they can push it, fill the room with light. And that leads to a lot of excitement, which are emotion. The emotions get triggered, good emotions. And then you don't know what to do with it. You're like busting. So then you do it. Then you express it. Whenever we were an Eved, the problem with an Eved or the unu is that there is a detour, that emunah goes straight into action through the person who chose to be obedient. I'll be obedient. Like, I know it's the right thing to do. Why are you doing it? My example, a person has to go to work. They have to go to work. They don't like what they're doing. Sometimes they're very uncomfortable situations. I have to deal with it. That's good. They're an Eved. They're not enlightened by it. It's not going to give them enlightenment. It's not exciting. It's a fact. It's like the emunah. It's like, this has to get done. And I'm going to do it. It's a choice. Of course, you can choose not. So when a person is obedient, they're circumventing the mind and the heart. This is a very deep and an important idea that I'm getting to now. When a person davens, just as an example, you have specific prayers in the Shemoneh Esrei, and mystically, it would be ideal to understand and to know certain mystical formulas called kavanot, connected to God's name, and how you put the vowels in God's name, and how you breathe, and don't ask, like, really, things that it's not halakha, but there are specific ways of prayer that can be very helpful to bring your prayer all the way down to this world. And then there is a concept that if you have pure faith, we spoke about this last week, what you can accomplish with using God's names, the Baal Shem Tov emphasized you can accomplish with pure faith. What does it mean, pure faith? That if we touch something very lofty in God, we don't need for it to come down to this world going through a chain of divine enlightenment and divine emotions. It can go straight into this world. Belief, action. God, reality. God, reality, connection happens only if I'm choosing to be obedient. See, if I am in the world of either enlightenment or emotional refinement and excitement, if I'm in that world, then think about it, then the energy that God is going to come my way has to go through a whole process. It goes from God into divine enlightenment, from there into divine emotions. There's a whole procedure. And when something is going step by step by step by step by step by step, there's a lot of possibility for certain things to get stuck on the way down. These are mystical words. I don't like using the word hacking a system, because this is a system that God made. But I know people like it. There's a hack. There's a hack that even if you're not yet enlightened and you're not yet excited, the choice of obedience brings with it a unique koach. And what's the unique koach? That it connects God directly with this world. Miracles, mystically, miracles, meaning when the nature changes, a miracle is a result of obedience. An act of obedience brings a miracle. A person who loves God, a person who respects God, a person who's very intellectually wired and they understand, they cannot make a miracle happen. They can bring a lot of holiness into the world, but it's not gonna change nature, because God is coming here the way He came here from the outset, and the result of it is the natural world. Yisrael refers to a Jew who's emotionally engaged. When a person is emotionally engaged, they have no struggle. Life can be hard. We all know that. But only hard begashmias. You have to work a lot, young kids or whatever the phase is, and there's a lot of hard work. It's not a struggle. Struggle is connected to an absence of feelings and an absence of enlightenment. That's where struggle begins. Bilam, when he looked at the Jewish people, he saw within us two groups. It's not numbers, very few Yisraels in this context. He saw Yaakov is a struggling Jew. Yaakov means that. We are the heel, we are the lower level. Yud is the highest level of God. The first letter of God's name. The highest goes straight into the lowest. Yud Ekev, Yaakov. Yaakov has a lot of amelut, struggle. The Alter Rebbe is right. So he didn't praise, he was not in awe of the person who's not struggling. Yeah, it's nice to see the tzaddik. Like, wow, look at that person. They have no struggles. Shkoyach. What was greater is that he saw that Yaakov, who has struggle, historically, we end up doing the right thing. And you should know a Jew ends up doing the right thing because of the neshama. It's amazing. It doesn't mean we don't make mistakes. It just means that if you look at the life of all the people that you know, and yourself included, over the course of life, we end up choosing the right thing. And a lot of it came dafka through a lot of struggle. And a lot of choice came because we chose to be obedient. And the reciprocal energy that it brings into the world is a much higher level of God. It doesn't have to go through, so to say, God's mind and God's heart. And every time that happens, it gets condensed and it gets somehow more limited. Lechatchila ariber. It goes straight over the whole system. It goes from the top point to the bottom point. But who makes that happen? The Jew, when the Jew chooses to be obedient. It flips a lot of reality, because there are many moments in which what we think we want, which is fine, is that we want for things to be easier. And there's nothing wrong with that. And we want for certain struggles to be removed from us. Which means, in other words, we want for there to be more good feelings, or we want for there to be better understanding. We want for that to happen. We feel the anguish, the darkness of when there's an absence of it. There's nothing wrong with wanting understanding and wanting feelings. But I think it's important to see things from a different perspective. I know what I want. My ego. I have an ego. I'm not a tzaddik. If I'm able to also see things through a higher perspective, doesn't mean I'll become a tzaddik. I still have my ego. I still have my lower perspective. But we become greater when we can see it from a higher perspective. And this is a general higher perspective of whatever people go through in life when there is struggle, because there is an absence of midos and an absence of chabad. You have that absence, which forces us to make a choice of, will I be obedient or whether I won't be obedient? Obedient to good, obedient to God, not obedient to the opposite, has something unique that the Yisrael cannot bring to the scene. It brings the highest level of God directly into the world, because I am bringing my emunah directly into my action.
Can I ask a question? Are there not things that maybe are easier to do in that formula, and then you get stuck on something, a mitzvah or some kind of action or something like that, where you find yourself, you want to do that, you know, just emunah straight to
action. But it's not working.
It's not happening, and it's bubbling inside of you and it's making you feel emotions you don't want to feel.
Correct.
Whatever.
That's everyone's
life. So isn't that time to go into the struggle?
It's a time to, on one hand, try to understand it better. There's nothing wrong with going there. And therefore, feeling for it. And it's amazing how in any area in life, if you have a good guide, if you know how to do that, something that you did not like, you can end up liking. It's amazing. Not saying those words. It's a journey. And I think part of life is God forces us to go on that journey because everyone is going to have in their life certain things that they don't like. And they can make peace with just living without liking it. And if they're told, no, there's another path. It can take you 20 years. Doesn't matter. But you can end up liking. Speaking about something that needs to be. The goal is not to change that. The goal is to change me.
Correct.
If that's the right approach. Sometimes change to that. So I think together with the avoida of liking it, the more I'll appreciate the opportunity of being God's servant, the more koach I will have, whether I'll use the word to survive, or ultimately to appreciate the value of those areas in life which are uninspired and filled with struggle. That's where struggle comes. There's something is missing, so there's struggle. That's where the Eved steps in. I'm going to say some words here. It's good to be recorded. It's good because this came to me recently from a few people. And I'm saying this with the greatest derecherets to Rabbi Manus Friedman. Greatest respect. He does not have to be defended. I'm not qualified to be that defender. But I think it's important for me to share the following. That I don't know how long this has been going on, but there is a certain insistence that he speaks about very often, about how God needs us. I think I understand what he means, and maybe I don't understand what he means. How it sounds to people like us, we always add the words, God forbid. God forbid. A foundation. It's the first principle of the Rambam. That God is independent, which also means God is infinite and independent. His infinity and his independence mean that God has no needs. Let's not put it out there. What he's saying is not in contradiction of this, but it is for people that are not very nuanced in splitting hairs, in understanding deep concepts. So just to say that God forbid that God needs us. Like the Hasidic discourse that I'm sharing, the Alter Rebbe Noch opens up the Maimer by prefacing, as he does always, God forbid there's no need. God gets nachas from us. God gets pleasure from us. He makes a point. Not that he needs the pleasure. And by the way, we have that experience. Pleasure, by definition, is a non-need. Because if it's a need, you can't say pleasure. Even though some people can use the word, but it's not accurate. Pleasure means you're getting beyond what you need. Like in Yiddishkeit, like bread is the need. It represents staple food. I know that many people don't eat bread, so that's not the point. Bread, like we cover the bread when we make Kiddush. It's simple. Why do we cover the bread when we make Kiddush? Because wine represents pleasure, represents a luxury. Beyond, you don't need wine, but it's... And people who have an issue with alcohol, it's not in contradiction to that. It's just the concepts. It's not the real wine. It's the idea. Wine represents pleasure. Bread represents a need. And in life, it's important not to mingle need and pleasure. In other words, if pleasure becomes a need, then I'm a spoiled brat. If having pleasure becomes not a need. You know, that's why it's actually important not to indulge in pleasure the whole time, because then you'll make it into your need. Then it will seize, you're taking the life, certain things. Crazy. The more tighter, the better. Certain things, the more, the worse. We know that, and we can't help ourselves, and we're hurting ourselves. Like, you want to have pleasure, so on occasion, pleasure. Always, no pleasure. It's called in Kabbalah, ta'anuk temidi. Any pleasure, that's always is not pleasure. Mm-hmm. You killed it. You sucked the pleasure out of it. Mm-hmm. So wine and bread. So that's the thing. Need, God does not have. God has pleasure. Doesn't have a need. What gives God pleasure? Which is amazing. So the Alter Rebbe is explaining that from God's perspective, the more the obedience, the more the pleasure. From our perspective, the more the enlightenment, the more the pleasure. The more the feeling, I'm a chaya, like in Yiddish, geschmack, it has a taste. It's like inverted. So there's a competition going on over here. And it's good to own, I want what I want. I'm not godly, I'm a human being. I would want to feel. I don't want struggle. But if struggle comes my way, the attitude of running away from it is a big mistake. And we don't even succeed. We have the wrong relationship with what we call dark or bad struggle. We misunderstand it. I'm not saying that we're meant to feel good. No. I mean to say is that we're meant to experience the bad. We should stop protecting ourselves from something that we cannot escape from. We have to almost be obedient to it. Like, what do you want from me? That changes a lot. Mamish, I know it's easy to say, but it's a change of attitude. Most people, they get into trouble because they are running away from it. But it pursues you. So go on drugs the whole time. A simple solution. Horrible solution. Simple, horrible solution. Or the pursuit of happiness. Like this is a very, very psychologically unhealthy way of living. No. Pursuit of life. Life has in it happiness, has in it pain. I want to live. If you want to live, then you have to want both. One thing, one without the other. I want to have one hand. I don't want to have two hands. No, then you'll be a half a person. Or you're going to live half a life. And that's no life.
I think pursuit of happiness, aside from America and all of that, pursuit of happiness is the true happiness. It's the nahat that comes.
So I don't want to use the word happy. Pursuit of life.
Okay.
And look at this perspective. God, the world was not born out of a need. God forbid. I'm using the words of the Alter Rebbe. It's considered heresy, like it's like the worst. God, the world was born out of pleasure. You know, words of Kabbalah. Not that everything gives God pleasure the whole time. It doesn't work that way. This is a world in which there is the potential, and actually it happens on occasion that God has pleasure. It's like we have kids. You're not getting pleasure the whole time from them, even when they're young. When they wake you up in the middle of the night, at that moment, it's not meant to, it doesn't work that way. But it's a source of pleasure, meaning there is a lot of pleasure coming from it on occasion. Look at the words of the Alter Rebbe. The nachas, the pleasure, is from the Eved. not from the Ben. You know, people are worried, like, how can it be? God made the world for a purpose. Like the majority of the 6,000 years, whatever that means, we are in darkness. We're not in Mashiach era. Yeah, because at some point in Mashiach, and not right away, at some point, we won't be able to be obedient to God. It won't be obedient. We'll be understanding it. We'll be loving it. God got his way. Doesn't mean he should get his way forever. The Rebbe used to say, enough. He had enough. Now it's our turn. We have the right. We are a partner here. We have the right to ask for that. He already got the most of what he wanted. We don't need to want it. That's what you were asking. I don't need to want struggle. I don't need to want. I should do my part to get out of it.
Mm-hmm.
But I have to surrender to it, because at some point we know that when you fight with something that's bigger than you, sometimes the more you fight, the more koyach you're losing in vain. Surrender to it. What's the it? Surrender to a moment of obedience. Obedience to divine providence, which is obedience to God, which would be a mode in which I will be very uninspired, and I should own that, and I'll be in a bad mood, and I should own that, and you want to be bitter, you can own that, And
but
I'm
still davening.
And I'm going to do that.
But I'm still davening.
And that's, so at least when you walk into a shul after this whole hour talk and you see a bunch of men, no one is inspired. No one. What are we doing? We're obedient. Now, I'm not saying that we should sing our praises and stay there. No, we should want to daven better. And we should do something about it. And we have some power. But it doesn't delegitimize. It doesn't take away. And that goes to life. That goes to life. You know, many people say, yeah, that's an excuse that religious people have to be very not spiritual. No. Look at life. I think that who is accountable? Who do you want to be with in life? Towards someone who has obedience. Consistency, reliability, trustworthiness comes from obedience. Someone who is very inspired is not trustworthy because when they lose that inspiration, they won't do it. They don't have the discipline.
And sometimes the nachat comes from just being a simple...
Mamash, that's what he's saying. The nachat is from God. And we should, and therefore have nachas of ourselves. In other words, we should see more value to the moments of life in which there is a lack of emotions. There's just darkness. What do we do with that? And we still go and do, at least to understand that from a higher perspective, there's something awesome. And it brings real miracles. It brings miracles. Miracles. Because since we are circumventing the system, we're going from the highest rate to the lowest, God reciprocates. Many miracles came into the world through acts of obedience. Came into the world through people that are obedient, not through the great enlightened. They bring miracles enclosed in nature. But real miracles, like what we call a miracle, comes from obedience. That's why perhaps, that saying Tehillim has such a power. For almost all the people that I know, saying Tehillim is not an inspired avodah. Very few people that I saw say Tehillim properly. Very few people. I don't know the Sephardic. I'm talking about my Ashkenazic world.
What's the proper way?
Proper ways. Yeah, a person should be filled with the feelings. If people would know what they're saying, we have to know what you're saying. You have to know the story behind it. Remember when I was told that Dovra Melech, his father thought that he was a bastard for the first 20 years of his life. Just understand what that meant in the world of feelings. Mamish, because his father divorced his wife for religious reasons, for overly religious reasons, and he decided to marry his maidservant for religious reasons. He felt he's not Jewish. He doubted whether he's a Jew. Horrible. No, Yishai was a big tzaddik. And because they come from Rus, and even though we know that God only prohibited male Moavim to convert, not the females, but there were people that were questioning that. And they were saying that the Torah forbids taking a convert from that nation, male or female gender, which means Rus HaMoyavia was not a real Jewish woman, and lineage goes through the mothers. Mom, no, he came to that, and he had already 10 sons, and he decided that now he'll become extra frum, he won't use the Eruv, meaning he's not going to be with his wife. But you have to be married. But if he's not Jewish, so his maidservant, she was not Jewish, he's going to marry her. This is what happened. And what happened was, is that in those days, you were allowed to be married to more than one wife at the same time. So it was not he divorced her. Not going to be with her, it'll be the other. Rachel Leah, the maidservant, found this to be wrong. So at the night of their marriage, the maidservant told the wife, I'm not going to be with him, you go be with him. As far as he knew, he was a tzaddik. Like, just shows you, a normal person would know who he's with. You know, he thought he was with a shifcha. His wife gets pregnant. He never gave her a get. Now, this is a very big darkness that, God forbid, that a man knows that my wife is not pregnant for me, she's a married woman. It means the kid is a halachically a mamzer. That was Dovra Melech.
Huh? He never divorced.
Never divorced. But the child is a bastard. No, because if a man is not with his wife physically and she gets pregnant, that means she got pregnant from another man. If she's married, a married woman who gets pregnant from any other man, that child is a bastard. How do you think a man would feel about that child? You have to understand, always when you read about David HaMelech, like if there was someone that was that grew up under a cloud of darkness, he was the reject. What happened many years later is that when God told Shmuel, or Nassan, or Shmuel, God told Shmuel, anoint one of Yishai's kids. He's going to be the future king. That's what happened. So he came over to Yishai, and the crazy story, and Yishai introduced him to his sons, and he had great sons. And God, and Shmuel, with prophecy, said, no, it's not him. And he went through all of his 10 sons, not him. He said, I have no more sons. No. God told me, I'm going to anoint one of your sons. Who else is your son? That was the first time that Yishai was open to the possibility that David was Taka his son. So you begin with that. You begin with a human being. I want to point out that if you learn about David HaMelech, and you learn about the journey of a human being, you know, we say that Adam, David, Mashiach. That means that the three greatest people that ever will live are Adam, David, and Mashiach. That's how great David is. I know people have a very negative opinion about him. I want to go back to your Tehillim, that when you read about the story of a person, and you know, even superficial, just what happened, why did he say this kapitel? And especially if we went through something, a drop of a drop of a drop of that anguish, and in that anguish, if you say that to Hillim, wow. Like, some people said to Hillim, and it was like crazy. When Tzaddikim say to Hillim, they cry. It's not, they're tapping into all of the, almost all of it was written out of pain. And the other ones were written out of joy that I don't think we can handle. We would go out of our minds. So yeah, there's a lot of, it's one piece of feeling. It's Zmirois. David HaMelech is the violin player. And we read it, it's like we're killing it. It's like opening up a Lahavdil, the most beautiful music of Bach, and I'm gonna read without even singing, A minor B this, but then read the notes, and do it for 2 hours. Shabbos Mevorchim, the whole Tehillim. That's what this is.
And Rabbi,
that's called obedience.
Isn't it true also that the
crazy though?
That's crazy.
The language that he uses. We don't even have access to the poetry of it and the deep meanings of different words that he chooses.
And Mamash.
And they're not going to be words that we understand.
I think in the future we'll unpackage it. I think we're so young. We're too young for that. I want to just go back. So I'm giving an example of Hasidim. We're told to say a lot of Tehillim, but we say it completely uninspired. If not, if we would be inspired, I think people would take the book when they're in a low. These are the best self-help books, Lahavdo. When a person feels beaten up, if they would just know more information, this would be their salvation. When you tell a Jew that's suffering, you know what? Say to him, it's like another punishment. Someone is sick, I'm already so depressed. And we read the words, it's so dark. Yes, so this gives just some light in it. That's called obedience. It means we're very unsophisticated still. We're very undeveloped. We're undeveloped, but we're doing. Now, we're not advocating to remain undeveloped. God forbid. We're very undeveloped and we have our part. But even before we grow, the virtue of doing it, not for me, is that I'm doing it because I believe we have a mona that these words give God's nachas. Yeah. So does God have nachas when it's being played to him with an instrument? The Alter Rebbe argues a lower level of nachas. The greatest nachas is when we're reading the notes from God's perspective. So it gives us the power to go through life prior to us doing our part in upgrading ourselves and getting a little bit more feeling, becoming human, and getting more understanding of what we're doing. Yaakov Yisrael. All right.